This podcast is sponsored by Barrage Coffee. It's veteran owned and operated by Kyle Early. Can't thank him enough for sponsoring the show. I'd like to welcome the next guest. He comes from the 82nd Airborne Division and now holds the rank of second lieutenant. Welcome to the show, Sam Kruse.
Hey, man, it's nice to be on the show. I'm really honored and really appreciate you, Alan.
Oh, no, you're welcome, man. And I, like I said, I'm honored to have you on. I feel like I've known you. We talked for a couple minutes before we came live, and feels like I'd already known you. Well, I mean, we already know somebody in common anyway, and we'll get to talking about him a little later in the show. Great guy. He was actually on the episode itself. So I like to start it off by introducing you like I did, and then doing a brief background check, kind of like where you grew up, what intrigued you to join the military.
Well, I grew up in Georgia, and you can probably tell by my accent, I've always lived here. I love Georgia, and I've been in several different parts of Georgia, but right now I'm in Gainesville, mm-hmm. which is about 45 minutes north of Atlanta. So I'm kind of up in the north part in the mountain area. So what intrigued me to join the military, I don't know. The visual was very strong for me growing up of all the pamphlets, watching the videos, and I just got caught up in all that. And I was like, man, I'd really like to do that. And I had this picture of two snipers laying in the ground with their ghillie suits on. And I went to the Marine Corps. I went to the Army and the Air Force. And the Air Force is like, we ain't got nothing like that. Or, you know, we have a high ASFAB. You didn't score high enough on your ASFAB to get in the Air Force. And I was like, okay. Well, so I left there and I went to the Marine Corps. They were all over me at the Marine Corps office, man. They really wanted me. But then I went to the Army, and the recruiter said something to me that I'll never forget. He said, you can go to Marine Corps if you want. He said, but they're a small unit. There's not a lot of room for promotion. In the Army, there's a lot more room for promotion. We're a lot bigger than the Marine Corps. And, you know, we got Rangers, we got SF, we got, you know, units that we're not allowed to talk about. Oh, yeah. And so I didn't even know what he meant at that point. It just sounded cool, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, man, I'll give the Army a shot. And I just pointed at that picture again. He said, oh, you're going to know you're in the Army if you want to do that. So we got to talking about units, and I just love the history and the pageantry of the 82nd Airborne. It just stood out to me, the image of it, you know, the 2As. I knew in basic training I couldn't wait to get to the 82nd, and people thought I was crazy talking like that. But I remember my first jump. I walked out onto the run on the tarmac, and I saw that C-130. And I said, man, I just kind of looked around. And I was, you know, 17 years old, and I was like, I'm in the 82nd Airborne. And my sergeant was like, shut up. So, yeah, I soaked it in, even at 17, man. I was like, this is great.
So your parents signed you off to go early?
Yep.
Wow, that's awesome. Sure it
is. And I had a battle buddy that was going to go with me, but like your situation, he kind of fizzled out on me. And
yeah, I know the feeling.
I came home on my first leave, and I saw him at the gym at a basketball game. He just kind of looked down at the floor.
Well, mine kind of – he did real well. I grew up with him, and his parents owned a Christopher Diesel up in Oxford, Alabama. And he worked with them for several years, and now he's like a big wig at a different diesel shop. So he's done really well, and probably not his path anyway. It was mine. I was destined for the military, needed it, and damn sure glad I did it. So,
me too. I feel the same way.
Now, your first experience in basic training, was you nervous? Was it everything you expected it to be, or were you just like, man, what did I do?
Man, I was nervous. Woo. I had butterflies. My toes were tinkling. I mean, it was beyond anything I had ever experienced in my life. It was nothing like I thought it was going to be. it was much harder. You know, you hear about how cold Chicago is, right? People tell you all the time, man, Chicago's cold. When I went to grad school in Chicago, I said, those people lied to me. I told my wife that. She said, why do you think they lied to you? I said, because it's colder than what they said. That was basic training, man. I mean, it was harder than anything I've ever heard. And, you know, and I've seen Full Metal Jacket and, you know, I was like, yeah, that's what I want to do. And then I got there. I was like, I'm not so sure I'm cut out for this, man. I'm not sure. You know, the movie's cool, but going through it's not as cool as the movie.
Was it the runs or just the shark attack? Or what was it that was really getting to you?
All of it. The runs were exhausting, you know, just physically exhausted from running. I made every run. I never fell out. But boy, there was a lot of runs. I didn't think I was going to make it, and I wanted to fall out so bad I couldn't stand it. But it just something told me, if you fall out, they're going to know who you are. And I didn't want the drill sergeants to – I wanted to lay low. My goal was to graduate basic training and the drill sergeants not know who I was.
Did they not know who you were?
I never volunteered, never raised my hand. I made sure that my drill sergeant had no clue who I was.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my last name being Steele, they kind of went after my ass, man. Ooh, boy. What's funny though is I've recently linked up with two of them that I, you know, I think the world of these guys, you know, at the time, yeah, it scared the hell out of me, but now I'm talking to, you know, not every day, but every once in a while, hey, how you doing? Or just shoot the crap with them. And, they're really laid back. But at the time you're like, man, these dudes are just monsters. You know what I mean?
I had my battle buddy was a guy named Cochran. He bunked next to me. He was the only other Christian in the whole platoon besides me.
Mm-hmm.
And we lucked out both being Christian brothers. This guy had a heart of gold, man. I broke my ankle in basic training. It was so big, I had to take the shoelace out of the boot to put it on. And we had fire drills, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get up and down the stairwell in 5 seconds like the drill sergeants wanted you to. So he would just pick me up, carry me down the stairwell, prop me up next to him. Then when the fire drill was over, he'd carry me back upstairs and get me in my bunk before he got in his.
Really?
I mean, I'm about to come to tears thinking about it. Yes, this guy was awesome.
Dude.
And I've never seen him again, man. Never saw him again. Airborne school, I saw him 2 times. And then I've tried to find him on Facebook and other things, but I can't find him.
Do you remember his first name, or did you get a yearbook?
John Cochran.
We're gonna find he John. You're out retired. There.
I know he went to Ranger retired.
We're gonna find this guy. Well, hopefully, nothing bad happened if he went overseas and did some deployments. Hopefully, he made it back for him. But we're gonna try to. That's our mission, to find this guy.
Okay, well, let's do it.
Yeah, you know, maybe we can get him on the podcast if he's around.
Oh, man, me and him were close.
So he'd carry you up and down the stairs. Did you make it through that cycle, or did you have to reclass through the cycle? Or what
happened? No, I made it. I looked like a kangaroo in formation, hopping on one leg and jumping, hopping and jumping. They called me Kangaroo Cruise there for a while.
Really?
I couldn't put any pressure on the ankle. If you think that's bad, just understand this. My 7th week of basic training during the FTX, you know, part of it where you go out and do your field stuff, I twisted my ankle again carrying that rucksack.
Really?
And I did all the road marches with that broke ankle.
Mm.
And I did all the runs with a broke ankle. I'll tell you something, man, fortitude and intestinal fortitude and will push you even with broken ankles. You know, I see these football players come out of in the NFL, come out of games with hurt toes and stuff. I'm like, you just don't get it. You don't get it.
Well, I think it's because, you know, back in the day, this is what I try to explain to people. And I'm not taking up for them by no means, because I don't like them kneeling for the flag or nothing like that. But back in the day, they didn't make $17 million a year. Now they are, you know what I'm saying? So it's like this broke toe could turn into something else. And I get it. I trust me, I'm not on board with them coming out like that, but I think it's a paycheck that they're wanting to preserve.
Yeah, they're protecting their investment.
Yeah. You know, so I get it. We, could you imagine
as being a soldier, like, as a soldier, and you know this, as a soldier, you're always going, come on, man, suck it up.
Oh, I'm the same way, man. I can't stand to see it. I'm like, Jack Lambert wouldn't have done that. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, no, I'm totally on board with it, man. But I kind of see two sides of the picture, because when I was an athlete in racing, I'm like, damn, if I hurt something, this backup right here is taking my spot, you know?
Yeah.
So, it's different in NFL, man. They make a ton of money, and I think they're just that little toe could turn into something bigger, you know what I mean? Now they're out for how long or in their career. So I kind of get it. But so you make it through basic training. How was it during airborne school? Because what is it, 2 weeks or 3 weeks? It was 3 weeks back then, wasn't it?
I don't even remember, man. I honestly don't remember. Maybe 4 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. I don't know. So your guess is better than mine. I true blued it. You know, I went right through it. And boy, I never forget that first time we got at when six. We get off at five, but you never get off at five, right? We finally would leave at 7:30 and went to see my parents. And whew, boy, that was beautiful. Because we didn't see our parents and stuff after basic.
Mm-mm.
We got on cattle trucks, went straight to airborne school. Had to get checked in, had to do all the stuff. And finally, after all that was over with and 7:30 hit, we got to go see our parents. And I remember thinking, this is weird. Like, I was excited, but I had just gone through some serious stuff. And I was like, I don't know if I should hug you guys or like stand apart from you and shake your hand, or I felt weird, man. I was like, I don't know how to describe that feeling.
Yeah. So what battalion were you in basic? I was in Alpha 25.
First of the 50th. And I was in Foxtrot Company.
Oh, really?
I think it was called First of the 50th. I'm pretty sure that's right.
Yeah.
But I was at 30th AG for 2 weeks or a week. Yeah.
Getting all that food.
Feed me three times a day, all this awesome food. And I was getting fat. And I was like, man, I can't wait to go down range and get all this off of me. I guess I gained about 10 pounds at 30th AG.
Oh, dude, it's easy. All that cake and all that good stuff. And shit. That goes away real quick when they come get you.
First time I ever took a shower with a bunch of Joes too.
It's weird.
That was weird too.
It is weird. It's like
I was all covered up, like going into the shower.
Because you're so young, you know what I mean? I mean, playing football, we got in the showers. It wasn't often, you know what I mean? It wasn't like even then it was like, man, no one's seen me in the shower but myself. You know what I mean? It's just weird.
I was all shy about it, man. I was like, I was too timid for that jump.
Oh, by the time I got the basic training, I was a dude doing jumping jacks in there in front of everybody. I didn't care anymore. Whatever. You know, I'm going to make fun of it.
So. Oh, I was shy about it. But we definitely had guys like you in there.
Oh, yeah. I had to make some fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Out of a hell situation. But
when I never forget, I was standing there in formation and my name got called to go down range. Boy, that streak of scaredness just goes through your spine, you know?
Mm-hmm. So you go through airborne school. Your first jump, what was it like?
Man, it was gorgeous. It was beautiful. I think the first jump, we didn't have to carry rucksacks or any of that stuff. I think we just lined up in chalks and went out the door. And it was during the daytime, too, which I took for granted.
Were you nervous?
I was nervous, yes. I was very nervous. You know, I think it's a 700-foot jump. So, and I'm hoping the tandem line doesn't snap. And I'm hoping that the chute comes out. And I was more concentrated on the spare than I was the actual parachute. I was like, where's that spare thing at? I kept looking down.
Where's my reserve?
And we had a guy in the 82nd called Peterson. Mm-hmm. This guy pulled his reserve every jump.
Really?
He would come down laying down, like his feet were up in the air, and as he was coming down laying down.
Jeez.
Mm-mm-mm. Now, I never got that bad, but.
So you was nervous coming out the first time, huh?
Yeah. I mean, dude, when you talk about the Army in the 82nd and being airborne, infantry, and all that stuff, stress and being scared just becomes part of it. And you get to where you don't even notice it anymore. You're just constantly stressed. You're constantly being tested every single day, and you just get used to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What was your night jump like?
That was real nervous. Oh, Lord, it was horrible. My first jump was it was at Cherry Point with the Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what I was carrying. But I had like those small little, I don't even remember what they're called. You might have to help me out. Stingers? Is that what they're called? Those little missiles with little rockets?
It wasn't an AT-4, was it?
No, it was a little small one.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. The little one. The it's about this long. And it opens up. It
looks like a mortar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a stinger.
Man, I was carrying that thing. I could not even stand up to get out of a plane. I could not get out of the seat.
Really?
Yes. I had guys pulling me. And I felt like all my gear was just like being stretched and broken. And I finally get up and I literally just bend straight over. And I was just bent like 90 degrees. I couldn't even carry all that stuff. And so I'm waddling out of the plane. I'm in so much pain. I look over to my right, man, and there's three guys sitting down on the other side of the plane that hadn't even gotten up yet. And I'm like, this jump's going to be a disaster. So, and they were Marines. I don't know what they were carrying. They couldn't get out of their seats either. We had so much gear. It was unreal. And I jumped out of that plane. I never felt so good in my life, man.
Really?
I was happy to get out of that airplane. And so I hit the ground, and one of the worst things that's ever happened to me in my life, I landed, okay, no light, no noise, right? Light and noise discipline. So I'm getting my stuff put together, and I put my chute on top of, around my neck, on top of my gear, on my LBE, and I'm walking towards the turn-in point. And I notice on my night vision goggles that I can't see anybody or anything. And I am a E2 Cherry, green as green can get, man.
Don't know where you're at.
So I got to use my map, which I can't use the light, so I got to use like the compass light to look at it. And I walk, finally found a turn-in point, which I think I just found this little trash can and dropped my chute next to it, just thinking that was a turn-in point. And then I had to use the little loom on that compass to figure out where I was at and where I needed to go. So I like plot this azimuth and I'm walking. Well, I finally get to a group of troops and I'm like, Alpha Company. They're like, Alpha Company. I was like, good. So I do a ruck flop, you know, because I'm in so much pain. And as I'm doing my ruck flop, they're like, what's your name? I'm like, Cruz. Private Cruz. And they're like, we don't have a Private Cruz. You in Alpha Company 2505? I was like, yeah. They're like, this is Alpha Company 3505.
Oh,
you're on the other side of the DZ. So I pick up my ruck. I had to get a guy to help me pick the ruck up, and I got it on. And I look, and this DZ is as far as your eye can see, man.
Mm.
I walked all night to get across that thing. And I get the Alpha Company 2505, my first sergeant standing there. And he has some very colorful words for me.
Oh, I'm sure. We couldn't
move all night because of your dumb mother. Bleep, 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 bleep. And my sergeant's just looking at me like, I'm going to kill you. So I walked all night while the guys got to sleep. One on, one off, you know. And
yeah.
Got there, and I didn't get to sleep. I literally sat down for about 5 minutes and got up, and we started moving out. That was my experience as a Cherry.
That's hilarious, man. What do you think the best part of being in an 82nd Airborne was?
The brotherhood. Deep brotherhood, man. Like, we never told each other we loved each other. We never thanked each other. The most you would get was a nod.
Mm-hmm.
You got a nod from somebody, you felt like, I fit, you know, like, I'm doing a good job. And that nod, like, I wrote a paper on it once, was deeper than any I love you I've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
That's the level of honor and strength and just the warrior code that you experience with the guys is just tremendous. You know, and I know 10th Mountain feels the same way. Ranger Battalion feels the same way. I mean, it's just, and all units on some kind of level feel that way.
Yeah.
You know, so when I talk to veterans, I don't care if they're Air Force or whatever. I respect and honor them because I'm like, yeah, you know, you did a lot too. You may have been different, but you know how I feel about, you know, brotherhood, camaraderie.
Yeah. So me and you both know a guy. He's awesome. Had him on the podcast himself. He's actually came twice to be on the podcast. And if he's listening or watching, I can't thank him enough. And
so, James.
Yeah. I want to hear your best Sergeant G story.
Sergeant G was good, man. Sergeant G, if you watch it, man, I miss you, dude. Sergeant G was a great, great sergeant, and he always did everything. But he did everything and made it and was successful. But he was different than the other NCOs. Sergeant G was actually he was kind of like your buddy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't say that disrespectfully. He was a great NCO. But he would joke and cut up with you like the other NCOs wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so that made him stand out as my, you know, one of my favorite NCOs. Sergeant Ariello will always be my favorite NCO, and he knows Sergeant Ariello very well because they were buds big time.
Mm-hmm.
Sergeant Ariello was this big guy, you know, real big guy. And I was thinking when I first met him, I was like, is he going to make the run? But he made the run, so he got those tiny little legs just to go on, boy. I was like, man. This guy runs too fast. But Sergeant Ayola was good friends with Sergeant G. And my favorite story of Sergeant G is we were in this wintertime FTX and field training exercise. And he came down with something, man. He was coughing a lot and said he was sick. And they let him go back to the rear.
Oh, boy.
And then later on, we heard through the grapevine that Sergeant G had gone to a race.
Oh, man.
Wow, we were out there in the field freezing our butts off.
Yeah, boy.
And I don't know if he'll admit that story. I don't know if I'm remembering it right, but I'm pretty sure I got that one right.
Sergeant G.
Sergeant G.
He's
well, him and our first sergeant started going to races too. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been to a few ourselves. I've got him in the pits with me, and hell, we went to the Charlotte race earlier this year, and last year we went to Bristol. Had a good time, man. Great time. And the next month we're going to see Guns N' Roses, so I'm excited about that. So that's your Sergeant G story, huh? Do you ever do any jumps with him?
Oh yeah, we did a lot of jumps together. We're supposed to jump once a month. During when you're rear side, you know, we jump two, three times a month. When you're out in the field, you know, you got to come back and make up those jumps. So we did a lot of jumps together.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you, what, tell me about a time that you had a scary jump, but I guess it was your night jump, right?
My first jump was the worst one. I told myself that this is what airborne's like. I want to get rid of my pay now.
What was it, $150?
You can keep your $200 a month if this is what jumping's like.
That bad, huh?
It was that bad. It really was. I'm not exaggerating how bad that was. That was awful.
So you ended up going to Kosovo. What year was that, and what was that like for you?
That was eye-opening, very eye-opening, being 17, 18 years old. I think we went in 98, came back in 99. Exactly how long that deployment was, I don't know. My memory's fogged on all that stuff. I think it was, too. The thing that I can't remember is we were in Albania for a while, too.
Oh, really?
So I don't know if that 6 months combines with Albania, or we were in Kosovo 6 months and Albania 1 to 3 months, somewhere around that range. So it may have been 6 to 9 months. Sergeant G would have a much better timekeeping. I'm not good at record keeping when it comes to numbers, man, but it was something around 6 months or so, I think.
Yeah. I just remember it used to be, I want to say they were 6 month deployments, but I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure.
Well, the thing is, people hear, well, you were just deployed 6 months. You didn't really do much. And I just want to say, when you get deployed with all the wrong gear within 12 hours, let's see how long you can make it. Because, you know, when we got our boots, was like literally a week before we left the country. Mm. Most of us had duct tape all over our boots.
What was 82nd doing, man? Y'all supposed to be outfitted with the best gear, huh?
We had jungle boots on. And we got there. We deployed in 12 hours. I was at the mall buying a Lit CD, L-I-T. That's the actual name of the band. That's not a slang word. And next thing you know, 12 hours later, I'm in Albania laying on the ground in a monsoon season behind my ruck. I'm like, what in the world is going on? It happened that fast. When I got back to the barracks after being at the mall, there was security guards around the phones. There were security guards all the way around the building. They'd taken our TVs out, our phones out of our room, gave us a packing list, said be on the rocks in an hour.
Really?
It was that fast.
Damn.
So nobody had a chance to really take it in. Hey, man, maybe it's raining over there. Anybody check the weather? We don't know what the weather is. They took all our TVs. So we showed up in jungle boots. And we had, you know, just awful feet problems, man. Nothing but patrols.
Man, that's all I wore was jungle boots. The greens.
Yep, that's what I had too. Those things were nice looking.
I love them.
but anyway, we wore our boots out within a week, or not a week, a month, and we had the wrong uniforms for the weather that we were in. And, you know, a lot of the wet weather gear as an infantryman, you don't wear it because you get so hot in it.
Oh, God, yeah.
You'll pass out on those patrols. So we didn't wear it, so we just had to take it, man. Just get beat on all day long by Mother Nature. And we had some other interest, you know, some firefights. And, you know, it wasn't Vietnam or Ho Chi Minh Trail or anything like that. But some of the stuff we experienced was for me, really bad.
Yeah.
Like people burning in homes.
It's terrible. And
because once you take away all their weapons, which is what we did, whether it was on patrol, raiding a village, setting up a roadblock. Yeah, take a look at these pictures. That's like literally two or three patrols.
Damn.
That's how many weapons. And I think SF was, that was after a whole day right there. A whole day of patrolling. And setting up roadblocks and other stuff. We were pulling them out of cars. We were pulling them out of Red Cross trucks. We were pulling them out of churches. We were pulling them out of people's attics and lofts, and it was just, it was nuts, man. There was guns all over the place.
Man, I wish I could have got one of them.
See, I can't stand them.
Really?
I got a bad affiliation with Islam with them things, so I don't touch them.
Yeah.
And I don't mean Islam's a bad religion. I'm just saying, from my experience and what I encountered, it's just not for me.
No, I get it. I like momentum, I guess, to get them, how you call it or whatever.
Yeah.
Mementos. I think they're pretty cool. Like, I got a sword out of Saddam's palace. I think it's badass. But it is what it is. You know what I mean? It's sitting right there. Well, I got a picture I took out of one of the damn palaces. It's sitting over there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You use it as target practice.
I tried to sneak home my Usyk flag,
mm-hmm.
which is the Albanian flag. I tried to confiscate a bunch of gear and stuff like that and bring it home. Of course, it all got thrown away.
My buddy said that thing you were carrying was a LOL rocket. Damn, I thought, lost my train of thought, man. Every time I look at my phone, I knew this dude was texting me. He always does that stuff, but I lose my train of thought. But let's talk about that book you were discussing with before we came on live, Ordinary Men.
Yeah.
Christopher
Browning. Well, that book will open your eyes. You know, I have two master's degrees. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I say that is not to brag. I say that because as an undergraduate, as a two graduate schools under my belt, and with an associate's degree, I have read more books than you can count. I've got libraries of books around me right now. And so I've probably read, I don't know, 300 books. And this book is in the top five.
Damn.
It's easily in the top five. And this book talks about ordinary men, which is the name of the book. What is an ordinary man? By definition, if you could come up with a definition, what would it be?
Now you're putting me on the spot, man. I don't know right now.
See, That's it. That's the answer. We don't know what an ordinary means. We don't know what, I told somebody who invited me over to Christmas. I said, well, I don't really like coming over to people's house for Christmas because, you know, I didn't come from a normal family. She looked at me. She said, what's normal?
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, what is a normal family? I'm one of those guys, like, I really think deep about things. I've always been a deep thinker. So ordinary men, what is it? A guy who drinks a beer or two and works his 9-to-5 job, comes home. And we would think in American terms, that would be pretty much a basic definition of an ordinary man, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, what were the Nazis before they became Nazis?
Ordinary men, I guess. Ordinary men.
So how do you go from being an ordinary man to a Nazi? Shooting people in the back of the head, pregnant mothers with babies, how do you shoot them in the back of the head?
Orders.
Orders. How do you obey those orders? How do you deny the orders and the morality of God, the ultimate moral code that we have written within us? How do you override that and become an instrument of evil in this world? And you're just an ordinary man before all this happened. Well, one of the answers is uniformity, right?
Mm-hmm.
If your brothers are doing something, you want to be with your brothers. That's one answer. Two is you become a sadist. You actually enjoy inflicting pain on someone. You enjoy the process. But how do you get so bad? Well, I'd like to say in Mere Christianity, C.S. Lewis answers that question. So everything that he brings up in the book about how did they become this way, I think C.S. Lewis answers.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you before the show, it's we are as human beings a collection of our decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Our decisions, if you add them all up collectively at the end of it, that's who we are.
Yeah.
So I always say, win every battle, Webb, right? Win every battle. During the day, you are in a position to make a decision about small things, mediocre things, or sometimes big things, right? Mm-hmm. Well, win every battle means you win them all. So at the end of the day, you finish with high character, not just with men, but with God. And then you can move on to the next day. Same thing. But if during that point, any point in that process, if you start making the wrong decisions, well, I'll do a little bit of this, or yeah, nobody notices. It's not going to hurt anybody. I'll do that. And I know we can get in lots of arguments with this stuff. I'm not trying to do that. But what I'm saying is, collectively, if you start making the wrong decisions and you start failing, then that's who you are too. Mm-hmm. And that's what the author of the book is saying. And here's the painful thing about that book that will test you. What he's ultimately saying is, not only were the Nazis ordinary men, but you're an ordinary man and you could be a Nazi. You think you're good. You think you make the right decisions. You think, but then, you know, there's this attitude in the book that's sort of like this. You are who you are based on two things, blessing and circumstance. Hmm. I can just leave it right there and let the mic drop.
Yeah, it kind of did for a second.
So it is a dangerous book. It will upset you. It will bring everything in your mind that you thought was concrete into question. And so, it, like I said, it's not for the weak of heart, and it's not for somebody who's just starting off reading.
Yeah.
But if you can get to reading, get your, you know, and kind of work your way up to a book like that and read it, you'll be all right.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely like to check it out. I want to shift gears a little bit. What's your thought? I don't know if you watch the news or what's going on in Afghanistan. What's your thoughts? I mean, you wore the uniform at one time. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts about what's going on? How we kind of just picked up and left overnight?
I'm angry. I'm very, very angry about it. First of all, you don't leave a country like that after being in there 20 years of investment. We invested 20 years into that country, and then we just picked up and left. The problem with that is when you pull a tear out of the ground, what does it also pull out of the ground? Weed. Yeah. It pulls a bunch of weed out. And so you kill everything around it. And what I mean by that is when you just pull the Americans out of there, you killed a whole bunch of people. Because the Taliban was sitting there just waiting for America to get out of there so that they could go punish their own people for giving in to the culture of America, for helping the Americans. I heard today, this disgusts me, that they're actually beating and hanging people who wore any kind of American clothing because they considered that to be too Western. It's just gone too far. Women who know mathematics now are being punished. The Taliban they don't think like us. So for us to try to put our morality on them and say, well, we'll let you have the government if you'll just treat women right, that's us trying to superimpose our belief system on them.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work. They have their own moral code. And we can disagree with it all we want to, but trying to change them so they can inherit the government so it'll be more fair for everybody else, that's not going to work. And so I'm just angry about a lot of things. You know, all of the thousands of people who died that night suffering from war crimes.
Yeah.
What these Taliban guys are doing, I couldn't sleep that night thinking of all the people getting. Oh, you helped America out, huh? Okay, well, you're dead. Bam. Women, children, men, it doesn't matter who it is. They're just wiping them out. And, you know, and then the president comes out for, you know, his little speech yesterday and didn't even take any questions. and just got back on his jet and left for his vacation.
Well, he's a freak.
And then the House Secretary of Press, whatever her name is, she decided to take a week off because she didn't want to face any questions either.
Imagine
that. And I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. Listen, man, I am a moderate politically. I don't care about either side of politically. It's not a political thing for me.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is when you're the president of the United States, you grab your cahootas and you answer questions.
You would think.
And but I don't care if you're Democrat and that offends you. It's not about the Democratic Party. It's about the president being a man.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, I'm very upset if you can't tell.
Well, it's, you know, you got all them people getting killed over there. You get million, I don't know how much money, weapons.
There's they've got weapons. Our weapons.
Yeah, exactly.
They've got our Humvees.
What really pisses me off, they got some weapons that I couldn't even carry over there. You know what I mean? I couldn't even get outfitted with some of the weapons they got in their hands. And why are we out? I could go on and on.
It's, yeah, me too, man. I'm pissed about all of it.
You know, it's insanity. Why are you giving these, you know?
Not to mention the fact that we lost a war. Hello? That's humiliating.
Mm-hmm.
20 years in Afghanistan and you lose. That's an embarrassment worldwide. You don't think China and these other countries are sitting around watching that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
America can't help you. And if they do, they're going to pull out. And then you get killed. That's our reputation right now.
You know, my buddy said it best, like, it was hard enough fighting them dudes with sandals on. Now they got our night vision. They got our lasers. They got everything that we have.
Exactly.
What did America think was going to happen when we pulled out? That government, them guys are going to hold that ground?
The Taliban needs to realize their, how did they word it? Their position in the global community or something?
Yeah, I believe so. It's ridiculous.
That shows you what kind of fairy tale land people live in. And I think they're being honest with you, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're being dead honest. That's how far removed from reality they are from an average soldier who's been overseas. Me and you might be from different divisions, but we understand. The Taliban don't care about that stuff.
Oh, hell no.
They don't give. They just don't care.
Okay. Here's another thing. I saw, I don't know what plane it was. I'm not a plane expert. I just know I get on my ass on one and I fly where I got to go to on one. So I don't know this, you know, I know what a C-130 is. I don't know the other ones. I don't care, you know. And I don't know if this image is true. I don't know if it's what, but there's like, seems like 2,000 Afghanis on this plane.
Mm-hmm.
What? How do you feel about C-17? Okay, cool. my buddy. How do you feel about all them people just free plane ticket over here?
I have sympathy for them. I really do. I know that we look at it as, okay, we're bringing more illegals over here. We have a border crisis. Those people are fleeing because they know the Taliban is going to kill them. Then you ask the question, well, maybe they are the Taliban just acting like innocents. And now you're bringing terrorists and people of a different culture over here. And Alan, I'm going to try my best not to go off on a tangent here.
And
teach a whole hour-long class on this. But America needs to be, at some point, a self-identifying country. We are this. You know, I like what Putin. We don't conform to what other people are when they come here. When they come here, they're Russian. And America needs to be that way. And I know that ruffles a lot of feathers. Well, we are a nation of immigrants. That's what we are. That's what one president said. But what are we? We have no self-identity right now.
No.
We don't. We can't identify as anything. And so, to me, if you can't identify as anything, what's your mission statement? What's the operative order? I mean, there's no. I'm trying not to go off on a tangent on that.
Oh, I know what you're thinking.
Because it would be very offensive to a lot of people. Yeah. But we need to have an identity as a country.
I mean, I see us as weak as we've ever been right now.
We are. We're weak. We're crippled. We're a three-legged dog, man. People are coming in here by droves, carrying COVID. And some of them are terrorists. Some of them aren't. And the thing with these people is you can't tell the difference between a terrorist and a non-terrorist.
Exactly.
All you can do is ask them, and they're going to lie to you.
Yep.
So in one sense, I'm like, close the border. Don't let anybody in. All right. Be America. Have an identity. If you come over here, you got to do it legally. You got to go through the paperwork. You got to learn, take some classes and learn America. But right now, America doesn't even know what America is. You go look at the educational systems. They've completely changed all the forefathers. You look at George Washington. You look at John Adams. They're all racist now. They own slaves, and nobody looks up to those guys anymore in academia. Academia turns their nose up at those people. Back when I was in school, George Washington was a hero.
Yeah.
Now he's a slave owner. Thomas Jefferson slept with slaves. Now it's just that they were dogs. And this country was founded on those kind of men, and it still persists today. That's the way it's looked at, man. They were the founder of the evil that we suffer now, is exactly the way academia sees them. And I remember when I was going to become a history major, and I got up and I had written this 20-page paper on John Adams, and I was very proud of it, and I was very proud of my founding fathers, and I got up there and I spoke, and it was like people were looking at me like I had something on my forehead.
I know what it looked like.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I'm trying to keep it clean.
No. That's why I did the old symbol.
But I remember, and when it was over, I failed. I got a D. And I thought I did the best job in the class. Well, we did like peer reviews, right? So people would write like their reviews of my speech and my paper and everything. And it was all like this. Well, he seems to sympathize with the founding fathers. You get what I'm saying?
Oh,
it's changing within America. We don't have an identity anymore. We're destroying our identity.
Mm-hmm.
What we had as foundational is now all post-modernity. It's post-modernism. Now it's let's take concrete things. Let's tear them apart, and then let's take a salad bowl and throw in our favorite pieces, and then that's what we are. Like religion, for example. I like a little bit of Christianity when Jesus talks about this. I like a little bit of Islam. I like a little bit of Buddhism and Eastern thought. And I like Kierkegaard and Nietzsche. I'm going to throw it all in a salad bowl, and we're going to take our favorite parts and mix it all together, and that's what we are. Well, the problem is with that is postmodernity and that kind of thinking is this. In order for something to be true, something else has to be false. There is no picking out your favorite parts and putting it together. Because not all truth is truth. It can't be that way. That's a very wrong way of looking at it.
Yeah.
It's false in its own concept. Okay, so there is no truth when you string together for your favorite parts like that. It's all false. It's all lies. It's all lies. It's all lies. And today, I live in Georgia, okay? And I'm surrounded by what you would call rural people. Okay. And I'm not making fun of rural people at all. But you would not believe the cockamamie stuff I hear every day. This guy came into the pawn shop and he was dead serious. My friend owns three pawn shops, and on my days off, I like to go visit him and just hang out with him and look at the guns and all the cool stuff he's got. Try to talk him into selling me one for real cheap. Wink, wink. Anyway, this guy goes into this long story. He's a Democrat and he's very liberal. And he said something to the point where, you know, the shot that they're giving us for these vaccines, they've got metal pieces in them and they're going to attach to your brain. And Bill Gates is behind these metal plates attaching to your brain because he wants to be able to launch the internet from your mind one day.
What?
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, I feel it.
People would rather believe that than something simple as the most smartest people on the earth are telling us, who went to school, read books, stayed up all night, studied night after night for 12, 15 years. They did this in their lives. They are telling us if you don't take the vaccine, you're going to get COVID. All you got to do is take the vaccine. Now, I don't care which side you want to believe. Here's another problem in America. Everything's political. I'm not talking about politics right now. I'm talking about a disease. And so
man-made, by the way.
Man-made. So the salad bowl, the little throwing in all this stuff, and then the YouTube educators out there who got like master's degrees in YouTube philosophy. They sit around and watch video after video for day after day after day, not on stuff like, you know, how to make a nut or a bolt or stuff like that, but just conspiracy theories galore. Okay, the YouTube people have created this whole subculture of believing lies. We have what I'm trying to do is I'm coming at this thing from as many angles as I can to say that we have no self-identity anymore. We don't know what the, I'll let you say it, we are.
Fuck.
No, what? We have no, and the other thing is too, I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat, we don't respect power or authority. We laugh at it.
I've been laughing for 7 months now. How long has it been? Six?
And I'm not saying he didn't deserve it. I'm just saying if he walked into my room, I'd stand at attention because he's the commander in chief, whether I like him or not.
I can't say that I would do that. I really dislike that guy. That's just my personal opinion.
I'm just saying there's a respect. There's a lack of respect for authority.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, we've just torn apart everything.
Yeah.
We got to get back to modern thought, modernism. We got to get back to concrete things, both religiously, politically, all that stuff. We got to get back to these are concrete truths and we can move forward now. We're going to close our borders. You're going to come here legally. You're going to be vetted. You're going to go through the process. You're going to be an American. And yeah. This is what being an American means.
100% agree.
So I'm sorry for my tangent, man, but
no shit. Everything you said was spot on, dude. Ain't nothing but truth's the truth, you know, and people don't like the truth. Cause you know why? The truth hurts.
It does.
You know, rubs people the wrong way. And I love it. You'll never find a bigger, I could go on and on.
I consider myself a patriot.
Oh, and I'm huge.
I'm hated by everyone.
You know what? They can.
Everybody hates the warrior until the enemy's at the gate.
My buddy needs to stop texting me.
You making fun of me?
No, not at all. I send him something every day and I know what he's talking about. Oh, man. Good stuff. No, he's not making fun of you by no means, man. We'll talk offline about it.
Okay.
Some shit I deal with at work every day. It's funny. But damn, I've lost where I was doing again.
We were talking about this
podcast. You know what I mean?
What I think about the people on the plane coming over here.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I got mixed emotions about it. Yeah, I get it. I feel sorry for them. Yeah, I get it. But
do it the right way.
Who's going to pay for these people?
Send them somewhere where they can become citizens.
Exactly.
Don't just drop them off and say, "Okay, you can go live here now."
Are they going to have jobs? Who's going to be supporting them? Who's going to pay for their housing? Who's going to pay for their care? Exactly. You know, and it's like, I'll tell you one thing Biden did. He sure did. Was right about this. He about raising taxes. He's doing a great job of that. Gas prices are out the roof.
Have you heard about and this may be folklore, I don't know, but I've heard that he's going to start a gas tax.
Oh, yeah.
Is there any credibility in that?
I don't know. Me and my buddy talk all the time. I don't really watch the news because if I did, I wouldn't own a TV anymore because it would all be smashed.
I get all my news from Facebook.
I get mine from my buddy out in Vegas. He watches enough for me, you, and everybody else. And, you know, he's really good at this stuff. And I'm terrible because I don't have a cork. When mine pops out, everything comes out. So I try not to watch it because I'm going to hurt some serious feelings and I'll probably get shot dead somewhere because.
Yeah, that's the way I feel on the show right now. I feel like I could go on and on and on, but I defend so
many. Me too. But I'm at that point. You know what I mean? I'm like, let's do it.
Maybe we shouldn't care.
I don't anymore.
Just say the truth. But then again, you know, some of that can be dangerous. So,
yeah, I don't care. I live a dangerous life. You know, I carry everywhere I go. Let's do it. I don't care anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
People are stupid, period. You know what I mean? They're just stupid.
We live in an anti-intellectual society. That is definitely true.
But let's shift gears again
a little bit. Started off on that tangent either.
No, so I'm gonna go through some pictures. I want you to explain to people that have never been in the military what it's like and what this picture is about. You know, this is your story, and here we go.
That is Albania, man. That's like I said. I can't remember how long the deployment was, but you can see the sides of the tent rolled up. Yeah, yeah, you don't want to unroll the sides of the tent. And what's cool about this picture is
what kind of tent is that?
Look at that flag on the pole right there. Oh, if you look at it carefully, you know what number that says?
It's a three. Dale
Jr. It's a three. Guess who owned that?
That's James. Got to be.
That's Gallegos, man. He had an Earnhardt flag fly.
Oh, my God. Legendary. Oh, I love that guy.
Oh, he's legendary, man. He's a freaking legend, dude.
Oh, boy. Okay. Gallegos, man.
Yeah, wow. He's got an Earnhardt flag in Albania.
That's awesome.
Now look behind that tent and all them sandbags.
Oh, I see them.
It took a long, long time to fill all them sandbags. And if you look at the floor we have. We have pallets. We just took pallets from the ammo crate and made a floor with it because there were so many moles. Moles were just everywhere, just coming in and out of the ground all over the place. And so we just shoved our cots in there on top of the pallets. And I had an Earnhardt flag, man. Can't beat it.
No, Dale.
I know you love that, dude. I love
it. Absolutely. All right, here we go. Next picture.
Golly, that looks like a different person.
Looks like fun there, man.
All right, this is the life of an infantryman. You take your poncho and you got bungee cords, or you just use paracord.
550 cord.
Gutted. Yeah, 550 cord. There you go. Forgot what that was called. And you just string your poncho up the best that you can, put some sticks under it so that the rain will, you know, run off. And you get woke up early in the morning when the sun first breaks. And my job was to go get – I had to literally go wake the cooks up.
Mm.
So I'm getting up, soaking wet, waking the cooks up. This guy snaps a picture of me. And I don't have my Kevlar on, which is a no-no. But my Kevlar was soaking wet, and I didn't want to put it on.
You got it on there, buddy.
There's me right there in Kosovo shooting an AK-47. We had a fun day. It was about four or five months into the point.
Huh? What was it? Field trip day? Fun day?
Yeah, it was like field trip day. It was awesome. They're like, we got all these weapons. We want you guys to shoot. It's fun day. So we're like, what? So we got on these two-ton trucks and drove out to this shooting range and had some fun that day. It was awesome.
Looks like it.
The hell's okay, going on here? Bomb a country for 60 days like the Americans and the Brits did. They don't have a fire station. They don't have police officers. They don't have courts. They don't have any of that stuff. So you become that. You become all of it. And what you're seeing right here is the fire station that we basically invented ourselves. We would go out on these Humvees and put these houses that were on fire out. Because the people began to burn each other in the homes in my opinion, it's when we started to confiscate all the weapons. They started finding more brutality and killing each other.
Yeah. Nice BCGs, bud.
I had Ranger specs, dude.
Nice Miles gear, too.
Yeah, Miles gear. Anybody who's ever trained with Miles gear will tell you, I'd like to throw that junk in the trash can.
Oh, yeah.
That junk was terrible. But I'm just laying behind a rucksack, and I think Corporal Hanner got that picture of me. I would always rest my chin on the M4. That way I could go to sleep.
Oh, yeah.
And my Kevlar would hang over my face so you couldn't see me at all.
Looks like you're pulling guard, but you're really fucking sleeping. I've done it many times.
Okay, this is a courthouse. This was our main base. This is where the captain was at, the CO, the first sergeant. And we stayed in it a little while, and second platoon stayed up the second floor, third platoon stayed on the third floor. Of course, we were first platoon, so we were on the bottom where the brass was at. But, we took this abandoned courthouse that, you know, everything around it, all the windows were gone. There was rubble everywhere from the bombs causing the concrete to bust up. And this is where the brass stayed in Kosovo.
Cool deal.
This is me at my most undisciplined phase ever. I was with this guy named Stillman, who I couldn't stand. He was a very, I don't know how to say it, bad soldier. And we had just gotten in a wrestling match because I had talked so much trash to him, he was ready to fight me. So we got in a big wrestling match. I pinned him to the ground, and he begged for his life, and I let him up, and somebody snapped the photographs of us. And this was at a church, by the way. So this is a Serbian Orthodox church that we got in a fight at, and we sat down, and somebody snapped a picture of us.
It's always good.
That's why none of our gear's on.
Soldiers doing soldiers.
This is part of the camp bombing campaign. As you can see, we found a military installation, and you can see the tanks without anything on them. And there was a bunch of stuff like there on that base. I don't know how the building is still standing, but it is. This is my translator, man. This guy was a young kid. His name was Ramsey. And I mean, he couldn't have been. He's probably my age in that picture. Mm-hmm. But I asked him if he knew English. He said, yes. I said, how do you know English? He said, John Wayne movies.
Really?
He learned English from watching John Wayne movies.
That's awesome.
So, yep, he was our translator. This is me, my first Class A inspection. As you can see, my paracord is wrapped around on top of itself. And I don't have many awards or any of that other stuff, but man, I was looking good, wasn't I?
Yeah. So that's going to lead me to my next question, man.
Yeah.
What would you tell a younger version of yourself, that guy right there? What would you say to him right now? What words of advice, words of wisdom?
Stay in the Army.
That's it?
Yeah, that's what I'd tell him. And get your paracord straight.
Yeah, get that thing unbucked. Oh man.
I like you, man. You could say what I'm thinking, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, man, that's just me, man. My last thing, I normally I bring it up every podcast. You know, I'm sure you know guys. I got guys that suffer from PTSD. Some of them are suicidal. Some have suicidal thoughts. What would you, if you had one on the phone that said he was suicidal, what words of encouragement would you give him or her?
Well, I got a lot of experience with that. First of all, I went, not like I said, I wasn't in Vietnam, Ho Chi Minh Trail, none of that stuff. I wasn't in Korean War. I wasn't in World War II. I was in a very short deployment. But in that short deployment, hearing people burn down in houses is one thing that frightens me every single night. I stepped on a tripwire that was attached to an explosive device that did not go off. And I had to wait 2 or 3 hours for the engineers to come take it off because we didn't have bomb squads or any of that stuff. We just had engineers. Yeah. So they came out when daylight hit and they took it off. That caused me a lot of anxiety. We got into a couple of firefights where I could literally hear the rounds just going right by my ears and pew, pew, pew. And we blew. I mean, we fired so much into the wood line burned down, you know, and there were homes in there and stuff. And, you know, and so, like I said, you know,
how's that bullet sound again?
Huh?
How's that bullet sound going by again?
Just right by your ears.
Yeah, I'm just messing with you, man.
Yeah, but it was, you know, so I went through some things like, you know, I burned in on a jump one time. I jumped out of a plane and my chute cigar rolled.
Mm-hmm.
And I hit the ground really hard, had a nasty brain injury, a TBI, traumatic brain injury. And so there are some things that I went through in the military that gave me some bad anxiety. And I don't even want to say that because I don't feel like I'm a warrior. I don't feel like I'm not a Delta operator. I'm not a Navy SEAL. And I, you know, I'm not those guys. And I haven't been through nothing. I've been through nothing compared to what they've been through. But what I have learned in all my studying and dealing with PTSD is this. Every individual is different. There are some guys out there that are hardwired to be SEALs. And they can go through traumatic event after traumatic event. And they may be messed up when they get out. But there's something about them that can take those experiences. But there are some guys like me who weren't hardwired so much and went through a couple of things and they bother us the rest of our life. Every individual is different.
Yeah.
I've got a friend right now that's an operator. He's been in the military 25 years. And the guy acts like he's a civilian. I don't understand that. To me, I look at the things I went through and I'm like, man, there's no way I could do 25 years of that.
Yeah.
You know? So the thing is, you always want to build people up before you start criticizing them. And I don't criticize people when they tell me their stories, even the ones I don't find to be true. Mm-hmm. I just let them get it all out. Get it all out. And I don't interrupt them very much. I let them cry, do whatever they need to do. And it's like an onion, you know, your first visit with them, you pair back the first layer, second when you get to the second layer, third when you get, you know, eventually the layers start coming off, then they start getting really emotional and they start to tear up and cry and punch and throw things. And so I let them do it all. I don't stop them. You know, I let them get it all out. And you know, I may not have all the answers, but what I can do is walk through the fire with you.
Yeah.
And so I come along, I don't point down, I come along your side and I say, man, I'm just going to walk right through this with you and let you experience and let me experience what you're going through. And at the end of it is a brotherhood and a bond. And I do have some answers, you know, from school and stuff, but I can quote the best authors all day long. It's not really going to help you if I'm not walking alongside you.
Yeah.
So there's a difference between sympathy and empathy. You know, sympathy is feeling sorry for somebody whose car broke down empathy is getting out of your car and going and helping them. So I don't just sympathize, I empathize. I try to get out of the car and go help them.
No, it was, that's awesome, man. No, that was well put, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, brother, it's been an honor and a privilege.
It's been awesome, man.
We need to do James says, what's up, brother?
What's up, Gallegos? Legend.
Hey, send in his comments if that that field problem was true or not.
Is he really?
Yeah, he just commented on here. So, yeah, man. No, it's been a great podcast.
You, sorry, you know what? And I'm a liar.
No, man. No, it's been a great podcast, man. I've enjoyed having you on. We need to do another one with just shooting the shit and talking about how effed up everything else is. You know what I mean? It'd be a good one.
Yeah.
No, man, I've truly enjoyed having you on. You know, I know you're going to come in person. We had some stuff going on, you know, both of us. So at least we got you on the air. So that worked out good. But he said, sorry, he was late. He didn't get to see that part. Well, you're going to have to watch it back, James, because it was a good one. So, man, maybe one time you can come in person. We can do a two-hour podcast and talk about how messed up everything else is, man. Try to get it right. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, have a good day. And
thank you, Alan.
Thanks for coming on. I'm honored that you come on and shared your story and had some laughs. And it was good, man.
Thank you, Alan. I appreciate you, dude.
Absolutely, man. Have a good one.
You too.